One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Please, come with me.
I'll help you get started. But then I've got to get back. All my work is here, darling. And it's never been more important.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding TV, a podcast about television. I'm David Chen, here today with Patrick Klepek to discuss the season finale, probably series finale, let's just be honest here, of Marvel's Secret Invasion, streaming right now on Disney Plus. Patrick, thanks for chatting today.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm ready to go. I'm revved up. Vroom, vroom. Let's go, Dave. I'm ready. Let's ride.
All right. So today on the podcast, we are going to be discussing Secret Invasion Season 1, Episodes 5 and 6. Harvest and Home are the titles of the episodes. You can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. We got some great emails. I'm going to read them later on in the show when it's relevant to discuss them. But you can always email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Become a paid subscriber at decodingtv.com. Support this podcast. Help to keep us going. And of course, follow us on YouTube, where we're broadcasting live right now, at youtube.com/decodingtv. Also on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram. Or should I call it X? Anyway, we're also on threads.net at decodingtv. So, on today's episode of the podcast, we're going to share our overall thoughts on Secret Invasion Season 1 and specifically the finale. And then we're going to do some detailed recapping of those episodes and then dive into any other specific topics. I do also want to announce that Patrick Klepek is going to be hanging with us for at least the next few weeks over here on Decoding TV, probably a little bit longer than that. I'm very excited about that. So our next show that we're going to be covering is Full Circle, right here on Decoding TV. That is the Max streaming show that's available right now. It's directed by Steven Soderbergh. Patrick Klepek, it's such a weird time we're living in right now, I have to say, where we have a streaming show starring Samuel L. Jackson and Academy Award-winning actor Olivia Colman. It feels like no one is watching or talking about it. Academy Award-winning director Steven Soderbergh has made a six-part miniseries with an amazing cast, written by Ed Solomon. Amazing cast. Feels like I haven't heard anyone say anything about it other than like a few scattered reviews. It's weird. It's weird. Things just kind of come and go. But you know what? We're trying to resist that here on Decoding TV. We're trying to give everything the attention it deserves. But Patrick, don't you think it's kind of a weird time in the streaming environment?
I think it's a weird time in media in general. I think so many things are fighting for our attention combined with a summer that really feels like, well, if last summer wasn't the summer where you're breaking out of your COVID bubbles and going places and doing things, certainly it's this summer. And so I just think in general, we were trending towards an environment where there's just an enormous amount of pieces of media and just life demanding our attention. And it's almost never been, it's also never been harder to reach people. Like how market thing these days, like it used to be pretty, simple, right? You put commercials out, you put billboards out, you put ads in magazines. It was there was a formula to follow. And
now children have their Tiki Talks and their, in these little iPhones with the silicon chips and such.
Yeah, but and they're with ads, right? Like this is one of those things that, you know, I'm sure you've heard from folks in your life that have children. And I know you've got a nephew, right?
Yes.
And they don't experience advertisements. Mm-hmm. That is not something that is regularly part of their lives. Most parents are paying for like YouTube Premium or on the Netflix kids tier. Most of the kids tiers of the different streaming services do not have ads regardless of what you're paying in the Netflix's ad tier has no ads on in the kids section. And so you end up in an environment where as adults, our attentions are split between a billion things. And then for younger generations, the way they experience and consume a lot of media does not often have advertising in it. And so just how do you reach people and make them feel like something is an event. And I think that speaks to the lack of eventiness of the MCU or comic book movies or just blockbusters in general. Like, how do you capture and convey you need to be here? And if you stumble into a meme like Barbie and Oppenheimer did, and then two quality films, you can create something spectacular that becomes an event. But I think it used to be easier to convey to people, this is important. Yeah. You should be watching this. And I think it's never been easier for people to say, I don't think so. I don't think I'll be watching this.
Well, so I think you can hear from Patrick's anxiety, how are his children going to be advertised to? That's what Patrick really cares about. By the way, check out his Substack about parenting and video games at patrickklepek.substack.com.
It's true.
So be sure to hang around at decodingtv.com. We're doing weekly recaps of Justified, and I'll be covering some more TV shows with Patrick Klepek this summer. So keep it subscribed. It's going to be a lot of fun. Now, before we get to today's episode of Secret Invasion, let's talk about a few things that were revealed in the time since our last recording about this topic. Mm-hmm. First of all, the budget of Secret Invasion leaked. It was in excess of $200 million. Six episodes of the show. And it does, like, large parts of it look very, very good, I would say.
Sure.
The cinematography is great. You know, like, there's a lot of, like, different locations, a lot of elaborate sets. And obviously, you have some really talented actors. But I can't help but feeling that they could have spent the $200 million in better ways. On that note, by the way, you mentioned Barbie. You know, the marketing budget for that movie leaked recently, too. The marketing budget for that movie leaked, and it was around $150 million. So that's how you create an event out of a movie, Patrick, is you spend $150 million letting people know about it.
It was one of those rare instances where a piece of media felt everywhere. And that's just... sometimes that's an organic thing. Sometimes that is like built out of a combination of organic and planned marketing. And at least Barbie felt like it was inescapable, but also delightful, which I don't know how to feel like, ooh, I love being marketed to. This is so much fun.
Right.
Like, it did strike a pretty interesting tone with that film in particular, where it didn't feel like it was being shoved down our throats, but it was like, I don't know. Maybe I do want to eat this. It's so delightful. Well,
beautifully said. I love the imagery, Patrick. That's really
welcome.
Really appreciate that imagery.
But at $200 million, I one of the things that I'd be curious, I don't know if we'll get any insight into this, is and maybe in the reporting that you've seen about it, there is something that speaks to it. But I'm assuming Secret Invasion was also like one of these COVID productions in which the sheer cost of producing it was up by an exponential amount because of the extraordinary measures that had to be taken on set. Like, my understanding is like Mission Impossible had a bigger budget as a result. That a lot of these that were start and stop and COVID measures end up, $200 million is still a lot, like even with that accounted for. But I do wonder how much there is a kind of a monetary inflation as a result of the kind of period that it was probably produced in.
Very possibly. That said, Patrick, I know... You probably don't remember, but there are some pretty elaborate action set pieces in this show. So I think that also, you know, the combination of those things probably led to that happening. But I think a lot of people who learn that number, it's a staggering number given the kind of dramatic results that we got from Secret Invasion. Speaking of dramatic numbers, I have another one for you in a moment. But before we get to that, there was another trailer for The Marvels that was released. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if you watched it. I don't watch trailers, but I've heard this one is a great one. Did you have a chance to check this one out?
I did. My policy with trailers is I watch the first one, and I did. Well, with Marvel, you can like there is a pattern. You can watch the first two, and you're cool. And then once they're in, we need to get your butt into a seat. That's when I like whatever that third trailer is. They're going to start showing you things that you don't want to see. I've found Marvel is actually pretty decent about what they put and don't put in the trailers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maintaining surprises. I mean, even to the extent of what was infamously, it was I think Infinity War, right, where they put in a scene where like Hulk was charging but wasn't actually charging in that scene in the film.
They put fake details in trailers to throw people off the scent. So, did you enjoy the trailer for The Marvels? Which, by the way, the other thing is, it has been revealed that The Marvels takes place after Secret Invasion. So that was a big That was a big debate that we had, was like, is it takes place before? Apparently the Marvels takes place after Secret Invasion. So
if you've watched the trailers, there is a there's a line at the end of Secret Invasion about like why Fury wants a certain character to join them to do a thing that is very clearly setting up a primary plot point of the Marvels. So I'm glad that it is taking place alongside that.
There might be some consequences from this. It also there's a line in the trailer where someone says, "Hey, remember the Secret Invasion?" No, I'm just joking. Anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, so
go ahead.
I it looks good. I mean, the actor playing Ms. Marvel is tremendous. All I really want out of this movie is like her to become a star, and for whatever bumps the MCU is going through at the moment, I don't want this to be an instance where people don't have a chance to like see her have this like enormous platform and shine on it. Because for all the problems with the Ms. Marvel show, which is like a really strong show for the first half and then a really messy show in the second half, like she is a constant delight and is just like to read like set reports where she's explaining to the other actors how the MCU timeline works because she's that much of a nerd. Like the fact that she embodies that character from the page on the screen. I like that. I really hope it leans into being a comedy. It looks very funny. And I'm hoping that it's not just trailer or like where they're like pulling out the comedic moments to hit certain beats. I hope that is conveying the actual tone of the movie, because I think the Guardians is, you know, like the MCU has a lot of humor, and Guardians is certainly probably the most comedic of the franchises within the MCU. But I think it's rare that you get a straight up comedy. Like She-Hulk is the closest they've gone to like trying to do something like that is straight up comedic from start to finish. And I would hope that, I'm hoping that's the direction they go in. But either way, it looks like, you know, is this going to be like Guardians 3 level good? I don't know, but it looks at the very least very solid. And if you like these characters like I do, I'm going into this with more optimism than I was going into Secret Invasion after watching even the trailers for that. So I'm hopeful.
You're going into the Marvels with more optimism than you are leaving Secret Invasion.
That's not hard. That's definitely not. But I don't know that I went into Secret Invasion with like the highest of hopes either.
Sure,
so with Secret Invasion, I was hoping to be pleasantly surprised. With the Marvels, it's more, I have a sense of what the floor is, and I'm hoping that the ceiling is especially high.
Iman Vellani, by the way, I think is the actress you're referring to. She plays Kamala Khan in Ms. Marvel, right? So shout out to her. Okay, last bit of notable Marvel-related news before we actually talk about this episode of Secret Invasion. And that is that the season finale, probably series finale of Secret Invasion, this is a new thing. I didn't actually know that there was a separate Rotten Tomatoes score for every episode of every Marvel TV show. And the season finale of Secret Invasion got a 13% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is the lowest score for any Marvel project ever in the history of time. No Marvel project has ever received that low of a score. I just thought it's worth noting. and before we dive into it, I texted you this news, Patrick, yesterday. And I think your response was, wow, that's really shocking. No, it wasn't.
I feel like that is I wonder how much that is representative of the reaction to the finale or reaction to the arc of the series, right? Like, I think, unfortunately, for the series, I wish we'd gotten a better finale than we did, but I don't know that people, their expectations were awfully low. It's not like the end of episode 5, which we'll get to, you know, like really sets up like, here we go. Like there's a line, there's a here we go line that otherwise like, is a big stinger moment that you can imagine the person writing the script be like, boom, cut to black. People are ready for next week. And that fell flat. And I think there's very little Secret Invasion could have done, maybe higher than 13%, but I think it was sort of had set itself up for failure regardless of where the finale went. But unfortunately, I don't think it reached above even that floor.
let's take a look. Just so people have the context. This image is way too big in the screen. I'm trying to show this image on screen, and it's like comically large. So let me try to reduce it. But basically, the Rotten Tomato scores for the rest of the show, episode 1, 52%, episode 2, 50%, episode 3, 38%, episode 4, 38%, episode 5, 50%, episode 6, 13%. So just for some context, as you indicated, Patrick, it's not like the show was burning up the ratings before the finale. That would have been actually sad, right? If it was like, this show is amazing, everyone loves this thing.
You just got to get through. There's a common trope.
And then they fumble the ending, and it's like, oh, that's so sad and tragic. Is like,
or the opposite, which is a common trope in talking about like long video games, especially RPGs. Is like, look, got to give it 40 hours, and then 40 hours in, whew. That new RPG just gets rolling. And so like in many ways, like what if there was, you know, which is Marvel's own show, Marvel, what if season 2, like what if you made a better Secret Invasion series finale, but then you had to tell everyone, but I'm sorry, you have to make it through 5 episodes. But the season finale is killer, and they redeem Fury, and it's super interesting. That's not the case.
It's the inverse. It's like the rest of the show was kind of bearable. And then the finale really took it down to a whole different depth, unfortunately.
The inverse is much less interesting than the multiverse. I got to be honest with you.
Indeed. Okay. Patrick Klepek, co-host of Remap Radio, writer of Crossplay newsletter. Let's talk about these final two episodes. Episode 5, Harvest. Episode 6, Home. What did you think overall of the episodes?
I'm disappointed because I think where we left off in our last chat was my expectations were not, you know, especially high for them to stick the landing on what was happening here. But what I was hoping for was, hey, the best that this show has got going for it when it has been at its most interesting has been getting like great actors in a room and talking. That doesn't really happen in these episodes. I can't really think of a moment that arises to, you know, like Vara and Fury at the restaurant, or Talos and Fury like on the train, or Scrody and Fury, before Fury gets fired. Like those are standout moments that I think are excellent. Not just relative to the otherwise kind of subpar quality of Secret Invasion in general. They're just good moments that I enjoyed, and they just stand out even more because of the relative subpar quality of the rest of the show and the storytelling. And so, you know, when you go into a Marvel third act, which is the equivalent of these final two episodes or in any of their films, I think, like, broadly speaking, the third act is if the spectacle doesn't deliver, then there's not much else for you there because the third act is always just the big characters with the powers whacking each other. And it's like, whew, if that part's not exciting, then there's not much to chew on in the final moments. And these final two episodes don't have those character moments I was looking for. There are instances in which they try, but I just don't think it delivers. And they go for a real moment at the end of episode 6. Like there is a, and this is what the road we were on all along to get this moment. Like music swell, where are those tears in your eye, viewer? And it just, none of it landed for me. I think this is a real disappointment for, it doesn't seem like it's Fury's finale for the MCU, especially if this takes place, ahead of the Marvels, which I'm assuming the Marvels won't kill Fury off. Also the way that Samuel Jackson talks about the character, it seems like he's communicating to Marvel that I love doing this character. Please don't, like, I'll just keep doing this until I can't do it. He seems to truly adore playing this character. And so I think that's where I end up at the end of it, is that like you have this masterclass actor doing something how often has he been in a television show? Basically never. This is somebody we see on the screen in film, and you had an opportunity to, yes, within the constraints of a comic story, but there, even within those constraints thematically, in terms of content, in terms of the kinds of F-bombs maybe we expect from Samuel Jackson in some of his work, this is a disappointing showpiece for this actor who deserved more. This character for their journey in the MCU deserved more. And I think that's ultimately my biggest disappointment is I don't really care. Like, do they do the Skrulls storyline justice relative to like what was in the comics? Like, what I was here for was like, I wanted to spend 6-ish hours with Samuel Jackson and a character that they care about. And I think the show failed to deliver on that basic promise to its character, its actor, and to the audience.
Beautifully said, Patrick. I did want to share this comment that Bob Iger made recently. I don't know if you saw this, but he's been going on a press tour, and I don't know that it's going well. You know, like it's, but he's talked about how he's acknowledged how the quality of Marvel streaming content. He's basically come out and said it's not that great. Like he said, quote, Marvel is a great example of our focus on streaming content. We ended up taxing our people way beyond their time and their focus. They had not been in the television business at any significant level. Not only did they increase their movie output, but they ended up making a number of television series. And frankly, it diluted focus and attention, end quote. I think what we are witnessing when it comes to these Marvel TV shows is people who don't seem like they understand how to make a TV show. Like,
yeah.
They don't understand the rhythms of what a good TV show is, of what episodic television is, and you know how you the feelings you're supposed to leave people with at the end of each episode or each season, how episodic TV fits into the bigger picture of the MCU. Like, it never feels like it's particularly consequential. And so it's been rough. I think that Secret Invasion is pretty much a complete disaster. I feel comfortable saying, you know, we're hopeful in the first episodes, but hey, this could go a bunch of different places. And it's not like there's nothing good in the series. You get to watch Olivia Colman have some fun, get to watch Samuel L. Jackson have some fun. There's some interesting ideas hinted at in the show. But ultimately, none of it really comes together. None of it really adds up to anything substantial. I will be shocked if, when you watch The Marvels, you think to yourself, oh man, we really needed to see Secret Invasion to understand this. I will be stunned if anything like that happens.
if anything, at this point, I'm hoping they just pretend it didn't happen.
Just cut their losses. Just cut their losses.
Well, we'll get into this, and I know we have a great letter from somebody addressing this, but essentially, like, where this show leaves Fury as a character in terms of his relationship with, as a protector of Earth, as like a bastion of humanity, and essentially like the core of this character that has been communicated throughout this franchise and tried to be distilled as his arc for returning post-snap, hiding in space, coming back to Earth, and like trying to revisit these elements of a past life. I mean, where they leave this character in this show is a nightmare. Is not the character that I think people have been rooting for, and I don't think the show understands what it like. It leaves on a triumphant sort of note, and it's like, the house is on fire. Fury, like, what do you go back to space? What are you talking about?
It is arguably character assassination. Like, it eviscerates the character of Nick Fury in many ways that we will discuss. But I think I would say it is a massive disappointment, the show. It's really sad that so much effort and energy and talent was expended on something that basically doesn't add up to very much. And I think that like all the pieces are there. Bob Iger's already said it. Like, it's not like there's any mystery as to why this happened this way. Like, they wanted to get as much streaming content onto Disney Plus as possible, and they overstretched their creative resources to the point where they ended up not delivering something very good. And that's kind of the result is Secret Invasion. So
I mean, it's funny because that comment could just be any commenter on a YouTube channel, and it's also the head of Disney. Not a great place you want to be, where it's a good point, Marvel fan 5623, also the head of the company. You know what I mean? Like that's a bad place for Marvel to be, where the kinds of any of this at this point earned cynicism or skepticism about like Marvel projects that were like, because the scale of development, the scale of production, the scale of post-production, it is so difficult for a ship this big to pivot. It is not as though, like, I am sure the people involved in this to some degree understand the problem, but answering it is, well, we'll see in 2.5 years when we can address it. You know what I mean? Like, it is not as though there's only so much post-production editing and finagling can do when the initial thing is so deeply flawed because of this stretching of creative resources in order to deliver something. And you stack that on top of COVID and everything else, and you end up in the mess that we're in. But then it's just, you can know the problem. The solution is not replicate a thing that has never happened in Hollywood before. Do it again. Like, that's an enormous problem in and of itself. But then also knowing that all, like, movies like The Marvels and other the films that are coming out, you know, next year, like, those were all put into motion with this, these same creative restraints. And so that's what I'm so curious to see what happens in the next 2 years, because it really feels like the pivot point for this universe is Fantastic Four and the introduction of the X-Men. And that is a long time from now, broadly speaking. And what erosion of trust happens to the Marvel universe between now and then? Like, you really want to put out that probably pretty mediocre Agatha show? Boy, that seemed like a good idea 2 years ago, and now that feels like an albatross, like, hanging around Disney's neck. I mean, it's got a stacked cast. Like, I want to see Audrey Plaza in that show. She's probably going to be delightful, but I don't have a lot of confidence that it's going to be an excellent show.
It's possible that that show will never be released. By the way, I think it is possible we never see the Agatha show ever. But all eyes right now are on Loki season 2, still coming out this fall, and the Marvels. I feel like phase 4 and 5 of Marvel have been pretty adrift so far. Mm-hmm. Have not really loved anything in those phases, other than maybe Guardians Volume 3. And, you know, Multiverse of Madness is fun to have Sam Raimi directing something. But, like, other than that, I haven't really loved any of these movies or any of these TV shows. I'm hoping that Ms. Marvel or the Marvels, I should say, and Loki season 2 can help to right the ship. So anyway, those are some overall thoughts on the Secret Invasion finale as well as episode 5.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, let's talk about what actually happens in these episodes. Episode 5, Harvest. I'm just going to start off by saying, so if you'll recall, I know it's, take yourself back to the mindset of 2 weeks ago, Patrick. We weren't sure if Talos was actually dead, right?
Yeah.
We're hoping he wasn't. But it turns out he's dead. And by the way, Nick Fury apparently isn't even that bothered by it. That's kind of my sense, right? Like,
no, I didn't even put that. All right. Dave. I did not even process the idea that Fury did not eat. Like, it's just unremarked.
Yeah, unremarked. Barely even. Oh, lifelong friend dead. Like, whatever.
One of the most touching things that happens in this show is that moment where they touch foreheads as a way of expressing
in the first episode, right? Yeah.
Yes, it's like a really beautiful like expression of a friendship that, you know, is, you know, non-traditional compared to the way, you know, handshakes and hugs and stuff. I thought there was a really neat expression of that. And the two just fucking die, and he just doesn't, unremarked upon, just off screen. He's grieving. He's really grieving off screen in an alley somewhere, and we just didn't have time for it. Oh, that's bad. Oh, you're making it worse for me in real
time. Like they don't even. I remember. We talked about 24 in the last episode of Decoding TV together, and one moment that really sticks out to me in 24 is at the end of season 3 of 24. Like at the end of season 1 and 2 of 24, there was like a big moment, like so and so is dead, so and so has been assassinated, like and so like at the end
Terry!
Of season at the end of season 3 of 24, I was like, ooh, I wonder, like, is there going to be another atomic bomb, like whatever. But instead, if I recall correctly, Jack Bauer, played by Kiefer Sutherland, gets into his car and just cries for like a minute. Like
that's what all-time TV moment.
Yeah, amazing TV moment. He just like lets the weight of all the events hit him. And I don't think we really got that for Nick Fury and Talos or, you know, anything along those lines. And it's not hard to do. You know, it's just show Samuel L. Jackson crying in a room by himself.
Yeah, he seems like he can do it at the drop of a hat. Just like, did someone say I need to cry? Like, I got this. His face is so expressive. And
I will say one of the things, one thing we did predict was, hey, it seems like Gravik's one trick is he, like, in every episode, he, like, kills a major character. And that did happen in episode 5, right? Like, there was that one guy protesting him, and he did kill that guy. And I was like, oh, Gravik's killing another main character on the show. So he's got his MO. He's got his thing. Okay, anyway.
Every villain needs
Everyone got their thing, you know? Okay, so Fury gets the president to the hospital and whispers, hey, don't trust Scroti, which is our name for, and Caroline Seda from Episodic Medium's name for Skrull version of Rhodes. Gravik pitches Scroti on having the president attack Russia. Soon afterwards, Scroti is pinned to a wall by an angry Fury anxious to out him. Scroti says footage of him killing Maria Hill is about to be broadcast, prompting him to leave. Sonia Fallsworth unmasks a Skrull with information about Gravik's super Skrull plans, while Gravik deals with more resistance in his movement, and he kills a Skrull who's critical of him. A fight breaks out. Gravik kills some more people. Fury meets with Gaia in the spot where Fury first pitched the Skrulls on helping him, and where Gaia reveals Gravik is after something called the Harvest. Let's pause here for a moment. There's a question of, like, why didn't Gravik kill Fury in episode 5, right? Like, and it's like, oh, it's because Fury has something he needs, the Harvest, okay? Which, by the way, we learn is like a bunch of DNA scraped from the ground, apparently by Skrulls, combined into a single vial. Which, let me just say, I'm not a doctor, but don't throw in a bunch of people's DNA together in a vial. Like it's not going to. It arguably will render it useless. So anyway, so there's this thing called the Harvest, and I'm just put this out there, Patrick. I feel like if you knew that was what Gravik's plan was for the whole time, none of the show would make sense. because basically the whole time you're watching the show, it's like, oh, here is what my reaction is after watching the whole show to Gravik's plans. Oh, it's a good thing blank didn't happen. Episode 1, Gravik explodes 3,000 people in a Moscow public area. Well, it's a good thing that didn't kill off Nick Fury. It's a good thing Nick Fury wasn't imprisoned in a Supermax jail that was impossible to get out of. You know? Gravik hires Nick Fury's wife to murder him. Oh, it's a good thing she didn't succeed. because otherwise he wouldn't be able to get that harvest. You know, like, what was the plan is my question. Anyway, really shocking episode 5 reveal of the harvest. Maybe I'm missing. Maybe there was a big grand plan. You know, does Gravik's plan make sense to you, Patrick? That's my question.
No. no. It almost feels like the show is grasping at, like, what's going to be our big set piece at the end. Like, how...
Right, right.
Like, okay, Gravik, Super Skrull, cool. Well, do we have any other Avengers we can put on screen? No. All right. How are we going to make a fight interesting? Can Fury do that? My man's pretty old. I don't know how much of a impact he's going to have. And so
they reverse engineered it from like what they wanted the final set piece to be, basically.
It really does. And yeah. it is, I think, endemic to the formulaic nature of, a lot of action movies, but especially superhero films in general, where they have to have this climactic fight at the end. Like that is part of what we do. And like building up to the big bashing of the action figures and in trying to engineer that, that's how you arrive at some of these storylines. Whether it's actually happened, who knows, but it feels that way. And it, as a result, it doesn't feel tense or interesting. And it's, as you point out, the moment you start really thinking about the consequences of the actions that have occurred to this point, none of it really adds up. And it's totally fine to hand wave stuff if the reveal is interesting, if it we learn something about the characters in a surprising way where it's like, okay, fine, it's a plot and can be convenient if it's justified, right? If it justifies the convenience that it's doing along the way. And I think as we're both arriving at is like, no, none of that feels like it's not earned. And even if you're to grant it the grace of not being earned, like where we arrive is not like particularly interesting as well.
Sonya tracks down some Skrull scientists, kills one of them, and intimidates the other into providing information. I actually like the scene, Patrick. I thought it's fun to see Olivia Colman having some fun, shooting dudes in the head, you know, like...
Oh, she's great. She, like, I delight in actors that can be one of the greatest actors of our time and also just happy to chew scenery and engage in... which I'm sure she thought was going to be some fun genre work. And unfortunately is just, you know, a pretty,
work.
Pretty poor.
Unfortunately, yeah, just work.
Just work. Cause she doesn't need that. Right. Like, she's such a highlight of the show because every time on screen, you're like, well, I'm going to have a smile on my face regardless of the actual actions occurring because she just immediately lights up a room in a way that, I get excited every time her name is attached to pretty much anything.
I wrote in the show notes, because I'm reading from the recap, like, what information did you get out of the Skrull scientist? Do you remember that by any chance? Like, what that was about?
Wasn't it like a location of the...
Okay.
So I feel like they were looking at a map, like a plan.
All right. That's fine. Simultaneously, Gaia meets up with Vara, seeking help to formally bury her father, Talos, and Gravik demands Fury hand over the harvest. As Gaia and Vara perform a Skrull memorial ritual, the two connect over their complicated relationships with the people they love. This is a cool idea. Like, this idea that, you know, and I am an immigrant person myself, and like, this idea of like, oh, there's all these like rituals and customs that you don't know because you grew up in a different place. And like, that's a very profound thought. And, you know, just as I fear we're threatening to get into like really a lot of gravitas, the moment is broken up by Gravik soldiers. and I have to say, this scene really bummed me out. And let me explain why. So they're kind of like bonding over this, like, oh, burying Talos, and like, oh, what does it mean that I don't know the ritualistic chant and all that stuff? And then there's this big action scene, and the action scene is really well done. Like, I actually think it's a great action scene, because basically Vara like pulls out this vest, and she has like a combat vest that she like pulls out for herself and like hands one to Gaia, and they both like have these guns and they start shooting and. It's really well done. And the reason it bummed me out was because I was thinking to myself, this is really all this show has to offer is Like, this is the best of the show. It's just this, like, brutal violence and this, like, brutality, basically. All that said, pretty solid action scene. Pretty solid. Most of the action scenes have been, like, pretty strong throughout this show, in my opinion. So, yeah.
And it breaks up, if I recall correctly, a moment between Gaia and Vara where I think Gaia kind of needles Vara on what, like, how they got along, or like the nature of Fury is Fury in love with the costume that Vara is wearing. And like, again, like this is like so many things that I feel like this is the talking point we've returned to over and over in analyzing and talking in the show, is like, I feel like I'm sitting and pointing at the TV and I was like, that's a cool idea. Like, keep going, show. And then instead, soldiers bust in, like Kevin Feige's like, no way, Bucko, like, can't have that in the show for too long. And
it almost is like the perfect symbolic demonstration of like what's wrong with the show in many ways. Yeah.
Right. Because it's like these two characters who, like, on paper, like, have so much to their experiences are so vastly different, and that could have been explored. And like the funeral scene is touching but not particularly long. Their conversation is interesting but not particularly long, and it's just that's and then just having literally people swing in and kick through a window. And it's like, no, get the guns out. And it's fine, like, you're right, it's a totally fine, enjoyable action scene that in the moment is enjoyable, but then it's when you do any of that reflection on, well, what was lost in those 6 minutes that we spent getting that cool action scene? It was like, oh, it's introspection between Vara and Gaia, especially given that Gaia is broadly in this show, like, exposition and plot movement as opposed to a character. And it's a rare instance where she gets a chance to express herself, and it's just like, no. We can't have any more of that.
Can't
it's,
have any of that. Bad. Yeah. No. So Fury meets up with Sonya, informs Sonya about Skrody and the Harvest, which is a mission where Fury tasked Gravik and others with collecting DNA from the various Avengers after fighting Thanos. The two arrive at a cemetery with a gravestone featuring Fury's name, where he reveals the real reason he hasn't asked the Avengers for help. Earth needs to defend itself. We can't rely on the Avengers, this whole thing that I've been building up for decades. Earth needs to defend itself. And also, we already spent $200 million on this movie, this show. We can't spend another $5 for, you know, to get Thor on screen.
Yeah.
Fury grabs the Harvest, a pistol, his familiar eye patch, and his signature beanie before heading off to fight Gravik. Kind of a silly, like, suit up scene. Like, it's like putting on the eye patch is such a big deal, you know, whatever. It's fine. What's funny about this whole scene is Sonya's like, so you're just going to give him the Harvest, huh? Pretty stupid plan. And Nick Fury's like, yep, you know, yep, that's the plan. It's pretty dumb. Or is it, Patrick? Or is it? Any other thoughts on episode 5 before we get to the finale itself?
No, I mean, but I do think, the last that I have on that episode is it's really that moment where he's putting on the eye patch, like, I think is really meant to be that kind of like, oh yeah, moment for this character. This isn't a character that has a hammer to pick up or a suit to put on. Right. And so there's kind of a limited set of options to where you feel like you're slipping into something iconic for this character. Mm-hmm. And it's true. Like, this has been a series. I don't know how long or how often he doesn't have the eye patch on, but like the way the show is communicating to you, hey, this is a big deal. He is slipping in to an old, like, functionally an older version of himself for one last job. Like, he's gonna put all this on, and he's gonna go do what Nick Fury does best, which is operate outside the system and take care of it himself. And even that one liner he's got at the end, it's just like, if that moment, which it feels like the show has been built, is like in theory building to, like, 4 or 5 episodes, falls flat.
The one line, are you talking about, he's like on the phone and he's like, let's go, or it's time. Yeah. He says something like, you know, let's go.
Music's,
right.
Yeah, and the music swells. I think it's like, it's time to end this. And, yeah. And you know, the music swells and you've got this shot of him walking off with his suit just like kind of swaying in the wind. And you're supposed to be like, yeah. And like the fact that there's no yeah in, like, I feel like the yeah is like the most common emotion in watching these franchises is like, they want you to go, yeah. And like, I got to that moment and was like, oh, and that's a bad place to be as a series that is really meant to be about getting you excited about the next moment. Because I don't know that I was excited for what was on the other side.
Have you seen Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer yet?
No, I have not. We're trying to line up a babysitter to go see it and see it.
Okay.
I don't
think this is a spoiler, but basically relatively early on in the movie, mm-hmm. there is a scene where Oppenheimer has a superhero suit up scene. No joke. Okay, no joke. Okay. He's like standing at a window and he like he gets his like pipe and he gets his hat and it's just like a superhero suit. And it's like, wow, I just saw this in Secret Invasion recently. It's also funny how he has like a separate compartment for every single, like he has a separate compartment for his eye patch, if I recall correctly. Anyway.
Does he have those everywhere? Like, don't, I mean, again, like it's scrutinizing the logic of what like is like one pistol. Like, does it need any ammo? I mean, like, okay, whatever.
Yeah,
whatever.
It's fine. Patrick, we're going to get into much more detailed issues with this episode momentarily.
Yeah, you're right. That's why I'm saying it's fine. It's just push that one to the side.
Let's talk about episode 6, the season finale, Home. Vara and Fury reconnect with a phone call that feels like a final goodbye. Fury heads towards Gravik while Scroti tries to convince the president they should attack Russia. As Fury moves in, Sonya Fallsworth informs Scroti that Fury's coming to take out the president. When Fury reaches Gravik, he fumbles medication meant to suppress the surrounding radiation poisoning him. Gravik reveals the person he's impersonating is the first human he killed on behalf of Fury, and those and other deaths fueled his rage against Fury and humanity. Fury reveals he never could find a planet for the Skrulls to settle on, and realized it was easier to hide the Skrulls on Earth than to reveal their presence. He hands over the Harvest, a collection of DNA from all the major Avengers, in exchange for the Skrulls leaving Earth. As Gravik rejects the offer and infuses the Harvest, Sonya accuses Scroti of being a Skrull. When Super Skrull Gravik attempts to kill Fury, it's revealed, whoa, plot twist! Fury is actually Super Skrull Gaia. All right, let's talk about this part.
Uh-huh.
So that was the plan. That maybe that's who he was on the phone with at the end, right?
I assume.
Was Gaia. He's like, let's go. Let's do this plan. You're going to impersonate me. You know, I love how, by the way, in the show, they're basically like, hey, Skrulls can impersonate people of different heights, okay? We're just fine with it. Like, it's not a problem. Mm-hmm. Emilia Clarke, like, 4'10". You know, it's like, it's fine. She's impersonating someone, like, 2 feet taller than her. That's not my biggest issue with this whole thing. First of all, I actually really loved this dialogue sequence between Nick Fury and Gravik.
Yeah.
This is like when Kingsley Ben-Adir, by the way, who did an amazing job in One Night in Miami, amazing job in Barbie. He really gets to deliver some dramatic material. And it really bummed me out, too, because like the dialogue sequence is so good, the monologue or whatever is so good, but it's undercut by two things. Number one, I think this is the first time we're getting any of this information, like that Nick Fury like forced Gravik to kill a bunch of people. Like, we know Nick Fury had them pick up DNA, we know he had them keep things secure, but like, I think the full extent of Nick Fury's effect on these people, yeah, I guess it's hinted at.
His child army, Dave? His child army that we're just gonna like go unremarked?
Well, I guess, I you know, was it clear to you that, like, that Nick Fury had caught, like, forced these people to perform atrocities? Like, I don't know, like, or to kill a bunch of people? I guess it was implied, right? But I don't know that it was explicitly stated. Maybe it was.
Well, because I don't think the show really wants to wrestle with those, like, the messiest of details. They want this angry villain that has all of this rage and discomfort and trauma from the experiences they went on, but doesn't articulate exactly what that means. I mean, you get the moment where Gravik says, like, you know, this person I killed, they had a family and they had children, but I did the mission. And I think he says something like, and maybe they were misguided, like, to justify the and it's like, it was like a very weird, like, it's
right. Like, was he right to kill him or not? Was he defending Fury?
Is that, I mean, it was cool that I killed that guy, Fury, but it was all the other guys that I didn't. And it's very easy to imagine like how even seemingly justified actions taken by Gravik on behalf of Fury would take a toll over time, especially if Fury is not delivering on the other half of that bargain, which is a place to call their own, a place to not wear these human masks 24/7 and not being their true selves. Because at the end of the day, that's the central tension of this show. The fact that it's unresolved as a result of the actions of Fury. But part of my issue with this entire conversation is on that conversation, did Fury also have like a therapy talk with Gaia to be like, yeah, and here's the ways I really screwed up. And I need you to convey this in a dramatic exchange with Gravik so he can be distracted. You know what I mean? Like, they give a moment that actually should be between Fury and Gravik. And because they've painted themselves into they're kind of pinned up against the wall where they need to also execute this plot twist with Gaia. It feels powerful in the moment and then is robbed of all of its emotional resonance because Fury didn't say it. And then the actions of Fury by the end of the show certainly don't seem to imply a person who has a whole ton of regret over the actions that they, whether they feel justified or not, that they undertook with Gravik and the rest of the Skrulls. And so it's just
like Fury himself never gets a moment to like acknowledge whether or not
the audience hears it from a mask of Fury, but we don't actually know if that's how Fury,
right. That's feels. How Fury actually feels. Right. Maybe he conveyed that all to Gaia. He's like, hey, I, Fury, feel really bad about this. So you got to convey this to Gravik. Make sure you say it to him like you're going to say it to me like you're going to say it to him. OK,
yeah.
Say
it to me. And they do try to set some of this up thematically where it could have landed. Right. Like so in the train scene where he talks about growing up and the show does try to play with the ideas of the Black experience and how difficult it is to assimilate into like a largely like white culture. And then is playing with those ideas, not to necessarily the best degree with like an extension with the Skrulls. And like the idea that this show would land with Fury where he determines as a result of his own experience as a Black person is like, if I can't do it, how are you shape-shifting alien? Like, it's just not going to happen. But it sounds like he never had that conversation. And even if he had that moment, didn't communicate it to the Skrulls. And so it leaves it all in a really shabby, weird place where it's like, I can see the thematic resonance that you're trying to make with this character's lived experience and how that would be felt potentially empathetically by the Skrulls. But we never even get these characters in a room to talk about that and to work it out. By all accounts, the end of this series is like, well, and see the Skrulls later, I guess. It's not really clear like how much impact like their presence in this universe even is going to mean going forward.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was the second thing that undercut the conversation. Is it's not even Fury that he's talking to, right?
Yeah.
And let me just give you some advice, Patrick Klepek. Like,
hit me.
Let there be one takeaway from this show, okay? Mm. Is if you're going to infuse the DNA of a bunch of superpowered superhero Avengers into your body via a elaborate science fiction-esque machine, make sure there's no one else in the device before you turn it on. Did no one watch David Cronenberg's The Fly? Like... I guess he's just like, hey, I'm going to turn this on, and it doesn't matter that Nick Fury is in it because
it's not going to fuse.
Because he's a human. It's not going to do jack for Nick Fury. It's designed to work with Skrull DNA only. Right?
Seems like whatever that machine does might just like turn Nick Fury into goo, though. Like, I you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I guess Fury, you know, I'm just not sure what the plan was.
I love Victor Games in the chat room says, why did Daenerys need a Geiger meter? Gaia had a Geiger meter with her and also like a bunch of pills. Hey, Victor, It's called committing to the part. And I'm sorry you don't understand that. You know,
because well, she does do it. It's one thing to commit to the bit in person in front of Gravik because you're trying to convey a role. But yeah, you're right. She checks the Geiger counter when nobody's watching.
Like, well, you don't. Hey, maybe Gravik is observing her on camera, Patrick. Okay. You ever see The Prestige? Right. Remember The Prestige? Yes, and how like. Yes. There's that scene when the old guy's walking to the carriage and Christian Bale's like, this is the performance, you know? It's when the old guy...
I apologize.
You know, this is the performance is when Gaia is checking the Geiger counter when Gravik is not looking. You know, like, that's what you really need.
Definitely not suggesting that maybe there was, like, a totally different way this finale played out and like, they're doing some clever cutting around to arrive at where they're at.
That would be wild, by the way, if that was if that was true, right? If it was, like, originally it was actually supposed to be Fury there. And maybe they killed Fury off in some original version. Who knows?
I have no idea.
Anyway. So then a massive... So okay. Gravik is like, hey, let's let bygones be bygones. Let's leave Fury in the machine as we infuse ourselves with the Super Scroll stuff. By the way, we see a lot of nice little Easter eggs in the on the screen when they're getting infused, right? There's like a screen that has Thanos, Abomination, Ebony Maw, Hulk, Chitauri, a bunch of Mantis. Like all these people, like their names pop up on the screen. So there's a lot of like Avengers references there. And then a massive fight ensues. So a fight between Gravik and Gaia ensues, with each swapping between different MCU power sets. What'd you think of the fight, Patrick? Like, screenshots of this fight have been circulating online.
It's bad.
A lot of shots look bad. Like in particular, there's a scene where Gaia grows Drax's arm. Like, yeah. Gaia grows a Drax arm. It looks very silly, but there's also a lot of questions about, like, aren't those, like, Drax tattoos? Why does Gaia have Drax tattoos on her arm? And it's because...
Right.
Is that part of his DNA? No, it's probably because they want you to recognize, hey, that's Drax's arm. So they put, you know, Drax's arm, like, with tattoos on it, on Gaia. And it's like, okay, it's very, very silly. You know, it's very silly. It doesn't look great.
Yeah, I can get past the logic holes on it, because part of the fun of the concept is... like you pointing at the screen and this functioning kind of like an Easter egg-y sort of thing where you're like, oh, I remember that. Like, again, like the nature of this, these types of stories, whether they're in films or television shows or comics is like, I can look right past the logic holes if it's cool and fun. And like, that's what this fight should be like. Oh man. Like, what if you put the Avengers in a blender and then got to see what that looks like? And you know, you mentioned earlier about, hey, this is a show that seemed to cost $200 million, and yes, in a lot of ways, like, it looks nice, it looks like equivalent to sort of like the Prestige TV we sort of expect, where it's like a movie in television format in terms of production. But the moment that I want to see that $200 million is that fight. Is like, I want that to be staged and look awesome because of the imagery that it's working with and like the fantasy that it's projecting. And instead it's just, it doesn't look good. It's not staged particularly well. I'm not even really sure how Gravik dies. They just both decided Captain Marvel was really powerful and decided to use Captain Marvel's, and like one blast from Captain Marvel to Gravik's chest. They can heal other things, but I guess if you take out the heart or the hole's big enough, you can't heal that. You know, like that stuff just wasn't really communicated to me in terms of like what actually prompted like the W for Gaia at the end of that fight.
It made me feel really bad for Emilia Clarke, honestly, who I think is quite a talented actor, but now has been involved in two ignominious endings of series that have like heavy CGI action scenes that don't look that great. Well, actually, no, the CG in Game of Thrones look fine, but like I've seen Emilia Clarke in this. I've seen them in the Terminator movie. I think it was Genesis, and yeah. even in Game of Thrones, and they deserve better projects than what they're getting here.
I agree.
Did you watch She-Hulk, Patrick?
I did. I quite liked She-Hulk.
Spoilers for She-Hulk, Attorney at Law. But at the end of She-Hulk, She-Hulk kind of goes to infiltrates Marvel's actual offices in real life, mm-hmm. And discovers that Kevin Feige isn't a man, but an AI called K-E-V-I-N, Kevin, the most advanced entertainment algorithm in the world. And she kind of lays out what she thinks is the problem with these Marvel TV shows. She says, quote, "The Marvel Cinematic Universe is known for its big spectacles and high-stakes plotlines, but it's often said that Marvel movies all end the same way. Perhaps this is a result of following some unwritten rule that you have to throw a bunch of plot and flash and a whole blood thing that seems super suspiciously close to Super Soldier Serum at the audience in the climax. I propose we don't have to do that. It distracts from the story." And then she talks about the story of She-Hulk, end quote. Well, it seems like no one listened to her, basically, for this show. I would submit that no one listened to her. Because it basically, you know, she made fun of that kind of ending in that show. And then this is a show that basically ended up having exactly that kind of ending. So,
yes. I mean, it's the kind of show that Pitch is a spy thriller in which, like, central to those sorts of stories is people talking, right? And, like, what has been the thing that we've liked the most about this show when it's done something interesting? It's people talking. And, like, I wish that's how this show ended, was Fury and Gravik across the table from one another, like talking about what has happened to the both of them. Like, Fury, like, we're left unresolved on Fury and the trauma that they have, like, that experience post-blip and post-Thanos. Like, that is set up early in this series as, like, central to something that Fury needs to resolve and deal with by the end of the show. Just completely forgotten. Just not even a thing with Fury by the end. And Gravik, clearly went through a trauma at the hands of Fury. Like, these characters have a lot of shared trauma as a result of their circumstances.
Yeah.
And you're exactly right to bring up that moment in She-Hulk, because it feels like it is primed to be, like, have diffused that moment specifically where, like, I don't know, Fury breaks the harvest and, like, just tosses it at the ground, and then they're forced to resolve whatever's going on, even if it's a gunfight, but, like, in a different way or something. And something that was felt high stakes emotionally, but was low stakes in terms of what was being displayed in terms of action on screen. And this is the kind of show that 100% should have done that, given the broad lack of powered characters, and that it chose to go in that exact direction and then not even do that part well is really distressing. And I think says a lot about their broader storytelling problems of the MCU, especially when they, like, how were we putting it before? Like, it's like this kind of genre appropriation where it's like, oh, we're telling one of these kinds of stories.
Right.
So, no, you're not. No, you're not. Just because you play the spy music, it doesn't mean that it's you understand what makes that genre tick. And that's no more encapsulated than this final moment.
I really think you captured it well, Patrick, when you were talking about how I think the show kind of wimped out on a lot of stuff. Like, it wimped out on having anything interesting or political to say about, you know, the refugee crisis or various refugee crises going on in the real world. It wimped out on potentially portraying Nick Fury as a villain, right? Or potentially portraying Nick Fury as having done things that were unforgivable. We only get... at this point, I don't even know what Nick Fury did. I still don't know what Nick Fury did with these Skrulls that he brought back to Earth and had them keep us safe doing whatever. Like, it's so vague
right.
What he did. And so...
Like, they invading Iraq and, like, working as, like, special... Like,
what is it? What is it? Yeah, it's not clear. And I think the show doesn't want to touch that material because it's too controversial, it's too polarizing. They're like, let's just play it safe. But they ended up making a show for no one that accomplishes nothing as a result. And I think that's really unfortunate. A few comments in the chat I just want to highlight. Choi to the World says, "Our family laughed out loud when Emilia Clarke's arm abominated." That was funny. The abomination.
That was a weird part about it. I wonder if this is a effects budget issue or wanting to make sure that, like, hey, we cast Emilia Clarke. We want to make sure that her face is still on the screen. Like, they were just, like, transforming their arms. Like, and you get a Drax arm, and you get a Groot arm, and you get a ice one, whatever
that
one was.
I think that's fine. You know, they want, you want to see that it's still Emilia Clarke fighting.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Also, Corby in the chat says, Emilia Clarke didn't have much to do with Star Wars, in Star Wars either. She's in Solo as well.
Right.
And unfortunately, right. I think, kind of wasted in that movie as well, unfortunately. Okay. There's still other stuff that happens this episode, Patrick. A fight between Gravik and Gaia ensues. We already talked about that. The real Fury catches up with Sonya and explains who Scroti really is. Scroti is shot by Fury and revealed to be a Skrull. This whole president in the hospital storyline was quite silly, I thought. The idea of the president being like, give me a gun. It's like, what are you? Do you think you're like Harrison Ford on Air Force One? You know, like what's going on here? Anyway,
you brought up multiple times like the weird lack of security presence around. Like Fury delivers the president from a chaotic situation to this hospital. It's like, I need to stay by his side. I'm like, do you have clearance? And it's like, no. Well, I'm gonna get a chair and I'm gonna sit outside this door because I don't have clearance. And it's like, it's just. Extremely silly.
I did like how Scroti is like doing like five jobs. Like there's that scene where he's talking to the president and he's like, you gotta attack right, hey, I brought you in. He like dresses down that admiral and he's like, uh-huh. I brought you in here to confirm that we need to attack Russia. Here, by the way, Mr. President, I've prepared some remarks for you. It's like in no world is this guy writing the president's speeches. Like I guess in the Avengers universe he's writing the president's speeches. But anyway. Mm-hmm. Okay. But it's rather silly, but whatever, you know. No, yeah. It's no sillier than the rest of this episode. So then Gaia wakes up the captured humans, including Rhodes and Everett Ross. Ross turns to Rhodes and asks, how long have you been there? How long have you been here? And it's then conveyed that Rhodes has been under for a long time, I think is the phrase that's used. I'm going to pause here and say, I hate this. Like, I thought this was very disappointing that the show creates this massive mystery. Like, the problem with this finale is it commits to nothing. Like, it kicks the can down the road on every single major question. How long was Rhodes under? We can answer that later when we get to Armored Wars or whatever his movie is,
right? I do think it's answered. It's just not explicit in the show, but it is.
Disagree, but let me. The other thing is just like, it's also like, Vara and Nick Fury, like, Vara says, hey, I'm going to go with you to negotiate this Kree peace later on. And she's like, but only for a little bit, you know, like it's not gonna be that long. So it's like that way they have options of like Nick Fury, like cut to Nick
like,
Fury.
Like I'm not gonna be in the Marvels, right? Like
right.
Negotiate.
cut to the Marvels. Vara is not there. Like there's a reason why they did it that way, right? Like so it's to give them options for not having any of these characters there, and so it doesn't commit to anything. Okay, that said, Patrick, you think that it does reveal, how long Rhodes has been replaced by a Skrull. I disagree with you, but let's hear it.
Yeah, so if...
I haven't even heard what you have to say, and I already disagree, but go ahead.
Okay. So Rhodes is carried off. Like, two people need to hold him up. He can't seem to use his legs. In Civil War, he's injured, and his legs are repaired by Tony Stark and his tech. And so I think the implication there is that at some point, post-Civil War, during Civil War, Rhodes is replaced, which means like the emotional arc that Rhodes goes on with like Tony Stark in particular and the funeral scene in Endgame was all with a swap.
Not true, because he was using leg braces in Infinity War and Endgame. So I think it's still original Rhodes in Endgame.
I hope you're right. I would like to be wrong on. I'm hoping that it's just the show communicating. Hey, he's been under for a while, So like his muscles don't, that's what happens when you don't use your muscles for a long time is like, you can't, you like, it would be difficult.
No. He has lost the, like original Rhodes has lost the use of his legs. That's why at the end of this episode, they're carrying original Rhodes out because he can't use his legs anymore. But original Rhodes also had leg braces that had like glowy things on them, right? Mm-hmm. And we see those in Infinity War and Endgame. Now, people have said that in Falcon and Winter Soldier, he doesn't look like he has braces on. So it's possible that by that time, like after Endgame, before Falcon and Winter Soldier, that's when the swap happened.
But, I hope so.
The point being, they don't say any of this. Like, they don't explain any of this. They, like, the question is even explicitly asked, and they deliberately don't answer it.
Right.
And I find that extremely annoying. I'm just going to put that out there. So,
I think it speaks to. I think Dan brought this up when we did like the pre-show kind of predictions and discussions where the show was going to go. I think like the Skrull stuff can come across and did come across as sort of cheap and emotionally undercutting in the comics as well. It's sort of like a problem inherent to the Skrull. It's like it seems really cool that the shapeshifting alien race could be anyone, and how long could it have been? But then in like reality, from a narrative perspective for the audience, it's a huge emotional cheat that it doesn't matter who they applied it to. Like if for some reason they got Thor in here and it turns out like since Thor 2, like he's been a Skrull, like, yeah, that's surprising. But like, I don't enjoy that. Like that robs me of like everything that the journey he went on with Loki, which is like so key to like what makes that character interesting over the last 10 years. So
there's Loki just like, there's is no... so key. Anyway, okay. You're a poet you didn't know it, Patrick. By the way, people in the chat are pointing out that Rhodes was wearing a hospital gown when he was rescued. And he was also wearing a hospital gown in Civil War. So a lot of people are saying like, oh, it was during Civil War. So it was actually Skrull Rhodey for the entirety of Endgame, you know, after Civil War, maybe, but I don't think so. Like just because he's wearing a hospital gown doesn't mean that's the case. So
it also may allow them to do this picking and choosing that you're talking about.
Yes, absolutely. They specifically didn't answer it so they can address it later.
So if all the fans are like us and it's like, wow, that would really rob us of our emotional journey and undercut those previous films. Like, okay, well, shit. Well, then, okay, it happened.
Somebody shows up, you know, there's like a cousin Greg showing up to Kevin Feige's daily stand-up and he's like, hey, the tweets are bad about the Rhodey. Turns out that extremely emotional sequence in Endgame where Rhodey says goodbye, it shouldn't have been an alien the whole time.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Okay. All right. Well, we're not even done with the episode yet.
No, we're not.
The president declares war on the remaining Skrulls while Fury attempts another reconciliation with Vara. Elsewhere, Gaia and Sonya team up. it's worth pointing out that Gaia is literally one of the most powerful creatures in the universe at this point, by the way. She has Captain Marvel powers, Thanos arms, Drax power, Mantis thing. She is like...
Yes.
So I guess she really liked Olivia Colman. Like, she really liked the cut of Olivia Colman's jib, and that's why they're teaming up.
It wasn't much of a pitch. It was just sort of... Hey!
Us? It was actually very similar to my pitch for Patrick Klepek to come cover this show on Decoding TV. Hey, huh?
It feels like one of those things that if we never see Gaia again, are you surprised?
Absolutely not.
No.
But yeah, so Fury yells at the president for turning humans against the Skrulls, because they're now hunting Skrulls for sport. And there's a series, again, great action scenes where, like, these people
really
just
thrilling.
Freaking mow down these Skrulls. And,
or not Skrull, right? Like, that moment where it's, like, the prime minister for the UK or whatever, like, where they, when they capture the original bodies from the Skrull base, like, you see that one of those characters who had been a Skrull earlier in the season, and then a vigilante comes up mows her down, and it's just the original person like resuming their
right.
their post, and it's like, that is wow, that seems like a cool show.
yeah. In fact, I think we got an email to that effect. Sean from Vancouver writes into decodingtv@gmail.com saying, I need to talk about the ending of the show. It ends where it could have began. The brief shots of hate groups and vigilantes targeting and killing both Skrulls and suspected humans could have been a launchpad for a far more compelling show. The violent targeting of refugees and groups attempting to integrate into a new society could have been a more fascinating and emotionally motivated drama, urging Fury and Talos to try and protect those hidden on Earth. Even the title Secret Invasion could have instead been a fear-mongering banner used by a wider xenophobic movement. Not to say it couldn't have still had Gravik violently pushing back or Olivia Colman's cavalier brutality, and this doesn't mean they would have been able to pull it off 100% successfully, but it puts you on just far more interesting ground, and honestly is what I thought they might do back when the show was first announced. Just sharing my two cents. Big fan of both of your work. End quote. That's from Sean from Vancouver. I think you really resonated with that perspective, right, Patrick? I mean, that's a thrilling sequence at the end where it's like, oh, wow, like, the idea of, like, everyone's a suspect and we're just mowing people down. Very interesting, right?
And it's genuine, like, it's, you know, and now part of it is because the sequence is very, like, short and brief and, like, you're not given a ton of context. It's sort of just taking in, like, the violent and visceral imagery. But, like, that shot of the woman, like, the prime minister being gunned down and it turns out she doesn't turn. It was like, just that scene alone is, like, it just seems really ripe for storytelling. Yeah. And, like, what is actually, like, the issue we're having with Scrody, and it's like, look, it sounds cool to like have an Avenger be a Skrull, but I don't actually like as a viewer, it turns out I don't actually want that. It sounds neat. It's a trick though, but it's not actually emotionally interesting. But what would have been emotionally interesting is exactly that is Fury coming back down from space. Like when it's been revealed that there are actually a million Skrulls on Earth, and like, what do we do about the good Skrulls and the bad Skrulls? Like you'd be able to use those elements of Captain Marvel and how it flips the, like anxieties over, outsiders on its head for the Skrulls. And I think it actually could have the kind of imagery that we were worried about this show playing with, whether it was just like actually engaging with it or just appropriating it. And thus like, flinging itself into potentially like positive imagery of like right-wing talking points. This specific approach, I think would have allowed them to maintain more of the interesting thematic parts of Captain Marvel. And also like, yeah, it would be kind of fucking spooky to have a bunch of shape-shifting aliens that like could be our world leaders and we don't know. And I just feel like they could have stayed in that world and had a more rich vein to tap into. And it's, I don't know if this the writing in Secret Invasion was so like kind of poor top to bottom. Like, I don't think there's a guarantee that because they pulled off one thrilling sequence that they would have been able to spin an entire yarn out of it. But it does seem like it starts from a better place than where they started with this show.
So Fury calls the president and is like, I can't believe you did that. Dude, like,
real one-term stuff, bro.
Super uncool, bro. Like, WTF, bud. And then, hey, by the way,
funny face emoji, Mr. President.
And by the way, it turns out that the Kree want to negotiate for peace. Great.
Wow, that's out of nowhere.
That's a great thing to introduce in the last 8 minutes of the show. Anyway, Fury and Vara reconcile and kiss under her true face, and she agrees to help Fury negotiate peace with the Kree, but, you know, maybe not for that long because she's probably going to be back on Earth, and we're probably never going to see that character again. So
yeah, I think that's right. I think you're
okay.
Right.
Jim writes into decodingtv@gmail.com. I just finished watching the last episode, and to say this series is a missed opportunity is an understatement. I won't get into the minutia of things. This show flopped all over, but my focus is on the macro. What does this show mean for the MCU? The show has left the MCU in a mess. We have a violence-condoning president advocating for people to go off and kill people who they believe to be Skrulls. Very troubling. Whoever wrote and conceived this plot seems to not have any appreciation for history or today's political and cultural climates. This hyperbolic, tone-deaf approach does not add to any conversation about how to address any current social issue, nor does it accurately hold up a mirror in a meaningful way for us to think about how we treat people. It doesn't take the time to drive home the theme in any thought-provoking way, which is a real shame because science fiction and comics have often been a great place to explore social issues in meaningful ways. Add on to this, Nick Fury just peacing out and leaving the planet to burn is beyond ridiculous and an incredibly and disappointing and crappy way for Nick's story to end, if it is the end. I don't think it's the end, by the way. We're going to see more of it in the Marvels. What is this show trying to say with Nick Fury? My best interpretation is heroes and remarkable people can only do so much. It's up to you, humanity, to fix your own damn problems. If that was the message, they buried it in an anticlimactic action sequences in a humdrum spy story. Secret Invasion really hurts Nick Fury's legacy in the MCU, and that might be the most tragic casualty of this six-episode mess. I have no idea how the MCU will get itself out of this narrative pit trap they've tossed themselves into. My worry is they'll just gloss over it and pretend it never happened while they try and get themselves out of their Kang problem. And when the glossing over happens, it will fully affirm that the show was a complete waste of time. End quote. Any thoughts on that, Patrick?
I think they're right. I mean, ultimately, while it is extremely disappointing that the most likely scenario for the Marvels is to broadly ignore or just make a passing reference to the events of Secret Invasion, where they leave the character is in my mind, it's like, okay, could we just, maybe we should just pretend it didn't happen and like go back to Nick Fury where we were ahead of any of the events here, because they just don't add up. And I'm not convinced that character arc, as I mentioned earlier, like, is actually understood by the show. Like, the gravity of like where they've left this character, I don't think the show recognizes, acknowledges, or is going to wrestle with. And I think instead where we're going to end up in the Marvels is, I don't think we're going to get any insight into a Fury that is like dealing with like trauma post snap and the events of their lives. I think we're going to get back to a Fury that's like, I got to wrangle these Avengers, you know, like sort of thing, which is fine. He's very good at that role, and it's been a delight to watch him be that role in so many films. But I'm with the person writing in that I think the show is ultimately going to be forgotten and just paved over with the progress of the films, which it is clear that is where the priority is being laid in terms of the storytelling consequences. And I just can't imagine the Marvels doing anything more than like if Vara's in it, it's for like a brief prologue scene that sets up the conflict with the Kree that will probably be a central point of the Marvels. But it's not like we're going to get a big dinner scene with them or anything like that.
Yeah, I think that's all right. One of the big disappointing elements of the show is that it makes, well, you know, before I get to that, let me just say, I think a lot of the show can actually be described using Simpsons references. So I sent you like Poochie died on the way back to his home planet. Like, that's basically how it handles the character of Nick Fury. Like, oh, he just went back to his home planet. Like, you know, he was on Earth and he went back to his home planet. But one of the best Simpsons episodes of all time, the monorail episode, I think it's the monorail episode, right? Where Leonard Nimoy is like, well, my job here is done. And Barney says, but you didn't do anything. And he says, didn't I? He says, didn't I? And then he like beams away. that's like Nick Fury in this episode. He's like, well, my job here is done. And he's like, you didn't do anything. And actually, you arguably made things much worse.
The people that I have aligned myself with and have an emotional bond with over our outsider status in society, they're all being killed. Well, hopefully Sonya figures that one out.
We need to take like one more moment to acknowledge how terrible the ending of Secret Invasion is, right? Where Nick Fury just F's off back into space. The Earth is burning. Like, Skrulls are being actively hunted and murdered, like Judge Dredd style. Like, people are being executed without any due process whatsoever. And he's like, okay, well, time for me to leave. Like, this is not
Got a space elevator to catch.
What? What is happening? What is going on? Why? Why? What?
Yeah, how? There's no, the fact that there is.
Would what we know of Nick Fury, would Nick Fury, the character we know, really feel like this is a good time to leave Earth? Like,
this is why, like, I can't speak to it. It feels like the thing we're going to, like, read in a book in, like, 10 years where it's, like, chronicling this era of Marvel and the problems it ran into. But this, it feels like there are two different shows. Like, we saw endings to two different versions of Secret Invasion.
Yeah,
one
yeah.
in which, Fury fails. And what he ends up doing is failing the Skrulls, failing humanity. And he didn't pull off the mission. Yeah, Gravik's dead, but right. The consequences are like Earth in chaos and the Skrulls being hunted by vigilantes.
Yeah, so maybe there's like a very dark, there's like a dark ending, which would be very bold, right?
There's this other ending that ignores that part, which is like, if you deleted that scene with the president and those violent scenes with the Skrulls and just pulled it out
or
of the show.
keep the violent scenes and just deleted that scene where he talks to the president on the phone.
Right. It would be he like, doesn't know that this is happening. Like, it turns out because of the actions of the Skrulls being revealed, of Talos, like, being at the scene of the presidential assassination, like he just doesn't know yet, like, this is what's happening. But it's that scene and then him screwing off to space, they just feel so disparate, and it feels like they just kept in a bunch of scenes from different versions, different tonal conclusions to the show that don't add up at all.
I agree completely. It does feel weird, and I would love to read the oral history of the whole situation. But anyway, to conclude, you know, I want to mention, by the way, if we had a big crowd tune in on the YouTube for us to talk about Secret Invasion. I think the word is out that the show was bad, and so people like. Yeah. People want to see a public execution.
The viewer count is higher than the Rotten Tomatoes score. Not where you want to be from Marvel's perspective.
That is correct. So I want to say, hey, thanks for tuning in, and be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or at podcast.decodingtv.com. Patrick Klepek and I will be covering other shows. Full Circle, the Steven Soderbergh miniseries, will be covering next week. It's going to be a lot of fun. Great show to talk about, and other shows coming down the line as well. So, yeah. And, of course, subscribe to us on youtube.com/decodingTV to get live episodes and video versions of the episode. Be sure to also check out Patrick's podcast, Remap Radio, and also his newsletter, Crossplay, at patrickklepek.substack.com. I'm sure he'd appreciate that. All right.
Thank you.
Final comments. What's a big bummer about Secret Invasion is it makes everything that came before it worse. Like, it's one of those sequels that makes the stuff that came before it worse as a result. Okay? Here are some things that I'm going to list off that it may make worse. The character of Nick Fury, as we've just discussed. Like, is this a guy that would just, like, leave the world burning like it is right now, you know, in even worse state than when he left it the first time? Is this a guy who doesn't give a shit about whether Ben Mendelsohn is dead? You know, like, all these things. Captain Marvel, which came out 4 years ago, I think, right? Well, what's great about Captain Marvel? Very subversive. Hey, the green alien things that look threatening, they're actually the good guys. And the good-looking Kree people played by Jude Law, they're actually the bad guys. Like, ooh, we've upset this. Yeah, you didn't see that coming, did you? hey, nice, neat little twist. Completely undone by this show because a lot of the green alien people are also evil, and but now we're hunting them, so you should feel bad that we're hunting them, but also some of them were kind of bad earlier, so like maybe just feel mixed about it. Okay. It makes it worse. That sucks now. Okay. And then possibly also like Rhodes, you know, we don't know when Rhodes was replaced, but like whenever that happened, possibly we'll undercut anything that happened after that point for Rhodes. So this is not a show that is additive. It is arguably subtractive to what we knew of the MCU. And that's a real shame. Patrick Klepek, we got to wrap up, but I'll give you the last word. Any closing thoughts?
I think when people are making, you know, if like you're getting into the MCU, it's like, here's a watch list. Like, just leave it off. Like, To your point of like it being a negative addition, just let that, you know, let that funeral scene be that funeral scene. Don't watch Secret Invasion. Don't worry. Scrody doesn't exist.
Let the funeral scene in Endgame, you know, let the funeral scene in Endgame be the last thing you watch. So anyway, he is Patrick Klepek. I am David Chen. Thank you for listening to Decoding TV. Again, be sure to keep it subscribed here on the YouTube as well as on the podcast. A lot's more to come this summer. Patrick, thanks for chatting today.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.